둘, 셋, 파!
For Hey Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 8.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
No, none at all. We can dive in.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks as always for making your way here for checking out the series. I do hope you hit that subscribe button. That way you get three brand new interviews sent to you every single week. A new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Makes it a great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover those new ones. You can do so any of the usual spots, including Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from. Subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Also, please give the series a rating, leave a review. That always helps out so much. We've had some great guests on lately. That includes Luke Hemmings of 5 Seconds of Summer, Nick Robinson starring in the Millie Bobby Brown movie Damsel. Tom Payne was here to discuss Imaginary and Horizon. Joe Keery of Stranger Things. He's also in a new movie called Marmalade. Neil Finn of Crowded House was here. Paul Sun-Yung Lee. He stars in the new Avatar, The Last Airbender. We talked to Jasmine Cephas-Jones of Broadway's Hamilton fame. Hauser from Two Cellos. Ross Lynch of The Driver Era. MGMT. John Malkovich. Paloma Faith. Just an example of what you get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. That's me, Kyle Meredith, today talking with actor John Bradley. You'll know him, you'll remember him, of course, as Samwell Tarly from Game of Thrones, Jon Snow's right-hand man. He's going to tell us about the series he's in on Netflix. It's called Three Body Problem. It is fantastic. Mind-bending does not really go far enough in explaining this series. It's an epic story, and of course I'm reading here, an epic story that redefines sci-fi drama with its layered mysteries and genre-bending high stakes. A young woman's fateful decision in the 1960s China reverberates across space and time into the present day when the laws of nature inexplicably unravel before their eyes. A close-knit group of brilliant scientists join forces with an unorthodox detective to confront the greatest threat in humanity's history. And of course, it should be noted that it's based on the Alexander Wu series, Three Body Problem. So John Bradley and I are going to talk about, so he teams up once again with the creators of Game of Thrones. They're the ones who are behind this, David Benioff and D.B. Weiss, along with Alexander Wu. And we're going to talk about making a challenging and complex story that still plays for anyone, as well as having his character created specifically for him and why it's important to use this moment to break away from his Samwell Tarly reputation. John is also a self-proclaimed obsessive of the Beatles. We'll talk about their final song, Now and Then, Paul McCartney's many voices, and seeing AC/DC and Elton John recently, as well as his work in the Australian Paramount Plus show North Shore, and whether or not he'd be interested in joining the long-rumored Jon Snow sequel You're going to get all that and more. We're talking Three Body Problem on Netflix. It's Kyle Meredith with John Bradley.
Hey, Kyle. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. It's such a pleasure to talk to you. Of course, we've enjoyed you over the years, most famously with Game of Thrones and everything else. And here you are back basically with some of that team again. And this series, this show, it's incredible. It's mind-bending. There's so much to dig into. You know, I think this was a big gamble, it sounds like, for everybody. And from my point of view, at least, what a payoff. Congratulations to you all on this.
Oh, thank you so much. It's very nice to hear that you liked it. And yeah, it was a big gamble for everybody, especially, you know, David and Dan, who I worked with for nearly a decade on Game of Thrones. This is the first thing that they've created since Game of Thrones ended. And that ended 5 years ago, I think, as far as being on TV is concerned. So they took a long break. And when it comes to their first thing after that, anybody who's seen it will tell you that they've not taken the easy way out. They've not been kind to themselves. They've embarked upon an adaptation that is in many ways even more complex and even more knotty and even more has even more scope to it than Game of Thrones did. So hats off to them for taking on this challenge. And it's nice to know that you think that they and we as a cast and everybody involved has pulled it off. We're very proud of it.
That's the thing. So, you know, so we get into this. This is still sci-fi fantasy, but it's a very different world than what we're talking about with Game of Thrones. It's present day, a little bit of futuristic and everything. And it's very scientific. I mean, very expansive in that scope. What was that like coming from your all? Because to try to explain this to somebody, like, there are the easy ways and there are the ways that we're not going to, you know, with spoilers, we're not going to get into or anything like that.
But, yeah.
But like, you know, what was, let's do the easy stuff. What was it about this that drew you to it? And how was it kind of performing in this sort of way when it's not just, I mean, this isn't cotton candy.
No, I think there are very few shows, very few movies that have gone before that you can even compare it to in terms of the size of it and the scope of it and just the depth and complexity of the ideas. It's really kind of out on its own. And, you know, there was, we released our first kind of teaser trailer for it in June of last year. And my friends watched it and they said they've never known it before when they know less about a show having watched the trailer than they did before they watched the trailer. It's a bit like how from the outside you look in and you think, how can one show partly take place in the Cultural Revolution in China in the 1960s, part of it take place in the present day, and then seemingly part of it take place in Tudor England and Kublai Khan's pleasure dome in Mongolia. And I think it was just the sheer ambition of it that drew me to it. And you know, and from a slightly more personal point of view, David and Dan, my old bosses, they wrote this part especially for me. They told me about this show way back in, I think, early 2020. And they said, we've written this part for you. We're adapting a very popular series of Chinese sci-fi novels, and we've kind of written a part that's as close to you as any part you'll ever play. And first of all, I was thinking, well, how's that going to fit into very, very dense and very scientific science fiction? And on the other hand, you do think, well, I'm kind of going to get to find out what you really think about me now. Because if somebody says to you, we're going to write a part and we think it's exactly like you, it's a bit like seeing yourself drawn by one of those caricature artists. I'm just thinking, oh, please don't let him be a sort of piece of garbage loser. But no, I was very happy with it. And yeah, I mean, I've not done a big TV thing since Game of Thrones, and they were the guys who were going to tempt me back. And yeah, it was just reading the scripts, reading how they've taken these novels and really humanized them and found the human stories in them and taken the scientific principles at play, but made it about romance and made it about human struggle and you know, all of that stuff. That's what they did on Thrones as well. They take these huge expansive things and find ways of making them intimate and human. And yeah, they've done it again, and it was a no-brainer for me.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with John Bradley. It's interesting hearing that they wrote it for you. Like, so I haven't read the novels myself, but in researching the novels, I went back and I was looking for your character, and I was like, I don't think that he's necessarily in here. or maybe it was taken from parts of that and everything. But it's funny to hear that because, even the way this character though is described, bit of a big mouth, Oxford dropouts. There's a hilariously, I love the cigar aficionado poster that's behind you the entire
Yeah.
time. So how close did it come then? What once you dug into the character?
I think there's a lot. I mean, there's a lot about my character, Jack Rooney, that is like me and that I'm not particularly flattered about. I mean, he is super opinionated. He's super kind of vociferous in his opinions, and he's quite bullish, and I am a bit like that sometimes, but in a way, that's the part of me that I'd like to be all the time. Everybody would like to have that confidence and that conviction in their opinions, and I am like that sometimes, and that's the side of me that they've taken and they've adapted into this story. But yeah, I think that another element of Jack Rooney that's very similar to me, now I think about it, is he's from a working class background in the north, in Manchester, north of England, where I'm from. And we both find ourselves mixing in circles and mixing with people that we have no real right to be mixing with sometimes. Like from our background, people from our background don't tend to be physics, going for doctorates in physics in Oxford. Some people do, I know. And it's very unlikely that somebody like me would become a, television actor and do these kind of big American shows and stuff like that. So I think that taking from our background, going into the worlds that we've gone into, and refusing to be cowed and refusing to feel inferior and all of that, maybe it's a kind of chip on your shoulder masquerading as a kind of superiority complex, who knows? But yeah, there's a lot about us and that's similar. And I don't think that and nobody who didn't know me properly, I don't think they'd ever offer me this part, to be honest. I think from Game of Thrones and from the other things that I've done, I'm kind of in people's minds as a certain type of character, and I hope that David and Dan have given me this part, and it's going to make people see me in a slightly different light, I think. I think that was their thinking behind it, and they kind of started my first act of my career with Game of Thrones, and they started the second act with this character, and I couldn't be more grateful.
That's really interesting. I know that's always a thing. It's as you're trying to build your career, because what, there's the safe way of doing it, of taking the money jobs and going where that road takes you, and then there's this obvious thing where, the artist side of everyone, of us all, where it's not the easiest thing, and you're trying to break that mold and that character. But I also feel like, and again, I know this is part of the compliment to the show, but I mean, this has got to be the type of thing that you'd be looking for. I think that anybody would be excited to get, with something like this.
Yeah, definitely. It's kind of it's happening more and more now, but there was a time where something that was so intellectually demanding of an audience, you either had to be sort of intellectually demanding or go for the popular or go for the numbers. And now that seems to be, it feels like people who make TV and make movies, they're treating their audience with a bit more respect now. And maybe, Game of Thrones was a part of that transition in terms of people. It wasn't just people who liked heavy fantasy who liked that show. It was everybody seemed to like it, and it broadened its audience out. And I think that the Three Body Problem is sort of shamelessly aiming to be the biggest show in the world without compromising on any of the artistry or the intellect behind the premise of the show and the premise of the book. So it's kind of straddling both. In an ideal world, you want to do stuff that you have a lot of faith in and you've put your heart and soul into, and for it to be popular as well. That's what everybody's going for, I think.
Yeah, in the trailer, there's this great version of Radiohead's. I think it's "Everything in Its Right Place," if I remember, is used.
Yeah.
And after I saw it, to what you're saying right now, that's what I thought is like, this series is like Radiohead. It is
Yeah.
complex, and there are these moments that could be challenging, but at the same time, I think my mom, who's not a Radiohead, probably knows the melody of Karma Police. Like, it still works just for anybody. Like, that's the great thing about, by the way, the use of Radiohead, and it's even used more there. I wrote some of that down. Was it Karma Police? Actually, yeah, that's used in the show as well. Like, oh yeah,
Yeah.
That hit me perfect.
Oh, good. Well, I'm very pleased to hear it. That's, I mean, I'm a avowed Beatles obsessive, and I think that you know, in the last few years with Get Back and the way the Beatles' work has been re-evaluated and rediscovered by people, it's, you know, when you think that how challenging they were and how experimental they were, and they were the biggest band in the world, you could kind of do that then. You could kind of be the equivalent of, you know, whoever the biggest band now is, or the biggest act now, Taylor Swift or somebody, and you could be absolutely off the wall in terms of the things that you, the new ground you were breaking, and encouraging your audience to, you know, to think a different way about things, all of that, you know, and that tends to be the work that sort of stands the test of time. And that's why they're being rediscovered now, because all the work went in 50 years ago and people are still getting a lot, or 60 years ago, and people are still getting a lot from it. And it's when you work, when you've got an artistic vision like that, that's when people are going to invest in it till the end of time.
Well, you can have an album that's got Blackbird and Revolution Number 9 on the same thing, and two versions as an offshoot. You know, it's I see them over. Who I'm trying to make out who's over your shoulder. Is that John and Paul?
Those are there.
Yeah,
those guys. Yeah, that's John and Paul. I'm determined to get the full set of those. They're very. My friend got me them for my birthday. They were a very rare limited edition, like 30 years ago, of these special porcelain kind of mugs. I'm a sucker for it. If the Beatles bring anything out, they're taking my money off me, sadly.
What was your first impressions of Now and Then?
I loved it, but it was always going to be like that. As soon as you find out it's a John song, and as soon as you find out it's the Beatles' final song, and there's a poignancy kind of embedded into that, it was always going to be slow, and it was always going to be reflective, and it was always going to be on the piano, and you know, it's similar to what the vast majority of John's more famous solo work kind of consists of. But part of me was thinking, wouldn't it be amazing if the Beatles' last song ever turned out to be a rock and roller, like a proper kind of
thing, right?
Yeah, kind of big, kind of foot stomping rock and roller, the kind of music that they loved. If you hear some of their early recordings, they were just they come across like a punk band in terms of the volume of it, in terms of the energy of it, the spirit of it, and you know, they had such an evolution as a band. But I was happy with Now and Then, but I just thought, wouldn't it be great to have a final Beatles song that was a bit more uplifting than this? But in the end, the poignancy was always baked in. It was always going to be poignant no matter what. But just to be alive at the same time as a Beatles single comes out, that's like seeing Hamlet when it first came out. That's what it's going to feel like in 100 years time, probably.
I will say, when Free as a Bird and Real Love came out, and I was a teenager, and that was, they became, I mean, they're still two of my all-time favorite songs, and I got swept up, and that's really when I had my first big Beatles moment. So that's, I was hoping for that, and when I first heard it, I went, oh yeah, okay, it's nice, it's pretty, it's, you know, Long and Winding Road style, you know, Chris Paul,
yeah,
on that one, but which is not always my favorite, but it's one. The more and more I heard it, the more and more I was like, this is absolutely just a beautiful song, you know. And
yeah,
I only do wish that we would have had the earlier Paul on there, but that's what can you do?
Well, in AR, with AR, you can do whatever you want. you could have that. You can have anything you want now. I saw an AI and a thing on YouTube of Paul from the 70s, I think, singing recent Paul kind of solo work, and it's amazing how he's changed his songwriting to suit his voice over the years. Because I've often said about Paul, especially when he was a younger guy, Paul McCartney doesn't have a great voice. Paul McCartney has loads of great voices.
That's a fun way of saying it. You're right.
He can kind of sing anything. And you know, he's still a very sort of important artist in a way, who stretches himself. But I wish I could have seen him, especially in concert, back when he could sing anything that you put in front of him. That would have been very special.
I still think the album New, which is probably a decade ago at this point, it's definitely not new anymore. Like, that's one of his greatest, like, late career moments, that whole album. I still, all the time,
yeah. And that was interestingly, that was working, I think that was the album that he worked with lots of different producers on, it like four or five different producers, and it's just a very varied album. On My Way to Work is one of my favorite kind of Paul solo career highlights. And yeah, he's still, you know, he's not going away quietly. He's never gone away. That's the thing about him. He's such a creative force. He's not just going to retire. He's always got creativity inside him. And those kinds of people are really inspirational, I think.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with John Bradley.
And I will get back to the movie, but I'll also mention, like, I saw you saw AC/DC last year, which I'm very envious of, and Elton on the farewell tour. Like, that's not too bad shows to take in a year.
No, I mean, one of the kind of bonuses of, you know, doing well and sort of having a few bucks in your pocket is that I can take my parents to see the artists and bands that they've always wanted to see and go to see them in concert, even especially if they haven't seen them before, because my parents are kind of advancing a bit now. They're both in their 70s and they still love their music. So to take my mum to see Elton John and my dad to see AC/DC and the Rolling Stones, it's kind of comes full circle, and it just feels like a really nice thing to do for them. And I should say that Elton, I know that Elton's finished his tour now for good, but in terms of being a showman and in terms of never, you can just tell he never does a bad show. He knows exactly what he's doing. His command of a crowd, even at his age, is just second to none. It was a really powerful experience to be in the same room as him. And I'm glad I could take my mum, but I'm so glad that I could see that as well.
And I'm looking at, you know, some of the other, I mean, you got the Stones on this this soundtrack as well on Three Bottle Problem with Moonlight Mile, Mazzy Star, Lana Del Rey, Can't Find My Way Home. It's all great. But I also wanted to touch on, because we didn't get to talk yet about some of these themes, only a little bit too, because what an opening scene. It's so powerful from the beginning.
Yeah.
I mean, the down with academic authorities. And I was thinking about just how this lines up, especially over the past couple of years in, you know, as conspiracy theories run amok in this digital age that we now find ourselves in. But the scientist's plight in today's environment, do you all talk about any of that when you're in the moment, like how this is actually speaking for some of the stuff, not just in AI, but, you know, the deepfake stuff and all that, and what's going on with, like, does that ever come up as you all are fleshing the script of the characters out?
I think it probably comes up in sort of earlier discussions and things like that. But as far as being an actor is concerned, I think that although it feels like a collaboration, we all do just feel like we're mouthpieces for whatever ideas are in the script. And I've never been the type of actor to kind of pull bigger themes apart. I'm just kind of, I'll do my own little patch of this duvet and everybody else can do theirs. But in terms of what's happened to science in the past few years, and you know, there was a government minister in this country a few years ago who said that the public are sick to death of experts. That was the actual phrase he uses. And you do start to think, well, if you're not letting experts make the decisions, who are you allowing to make the decisions, really? In terms of qualifications and a sort of deeper understanding of things, there's no way that your agenda and your kind of take on it as a lay person, there's no way that that stands up and can look eye to eye with an expert's opinion on it. But it's a strange time for science now, but ultimately if you injure yourself, chances are you're going to ring a doctor. Chances are you're going to ring an expert one of these days. If you want to sort of shun expertise and shun scientific discovery and thousands of years of development and all that stuff, fine, you can do, but don't come calling for it when you really need it.
That's the part that gives me hope, is like lots of stuff there's always noise out there. There's always noise out there. But every now and then some of that noise gets a little loud where you go, what is going on here? And again, I'm just kind of pulling that back into this show, where I think that's what I appreciated about this, because it wipes a lot of that away, even when it's not meaning to, you know, it's just puts the focus back on, it was Laurie Anderson, you know, Lou Reed, Laurie Anderson. She had a song called Only an Expert. When it comes down to it, though, you have talking heads and you have people making noise, and then you have the people that you actually trust. And thank goodness for
Exactly. And, you know, it does make a lot of, and the book makes this point as well. It kind of encourages people to recalibrate the way we see otherness and the way we see other people from other, you know, it could be other countries or, you know, in terms of other planets. And when it comes to three-body problem, that we'd always consider whoever is foreign to be the enemy. And we don't really think of them as human beings. We don't really think of them as people. We just see we're encouraged by a lot of politicians in this country and globally to see otherness as a threat. And in three-body problem, the threat is a very big existential one for mankind as far as we can see it. But, you know what I mean? We don't know what their story is. In sort of alien invasion movies in the past, we think, oh, we're the good guys and the people who are trying to invade are the bad guys. But what if they've got justified reasons to do it? And what if it's more nuanced and more complicated than that? And, you know, the show and the book doesn't batter you over the head with those kind of ideas, but they're just there for you if you want to take notice of them. And I think that all of that leads to a very rich and very layered piece that you know, it's got a lot. There's an awful lot to it. And it, like, to bring it back around to the Beatles again, there's so much in it, and there'll be something in it that you like, even if you don't accept all of it, even if some of it goes slightly over your head, there'll be enough in that show to draw you in, we think. And we're just very excited for people to see it.
It really is. And it's visually stunning. I mean, and what you like, it's just incredible to watch, and it is so gripping. And I do love seeing it. I know you've got other things going on too. I mean, North Shore, what you've been doing down in Australia, is that still?
Yeah. Well, North Shore, that was on in, that's on streaming on Paramount Plus in Australia. We're still hoping to get it seen in the UK and the US. It's under the Paramount umbrella, so hopefully it'll be out one day. And I really hope people do see it, because before we did that, my agent said, what do you want to do next? And I said, well, think about all the things I've never done before, in terms of I've never done a sort of romance before. I've never done a cop thing before. Everything that I've done seems to take place in some kind of heightened reality, whether it be in Game of Thrones or whether it be in space or whether it be as part of a sort of international pop stars tour in Entourage, the Marry Me movie that I did with Jennifer Lopez a couple of years ago. None of that's really the world that you see out of your window. And the thing about North Shore was it's a very real world, very grounded, quite gritty crime drama in which I play a cop who's struggling with his marriage and all of that. It's everything that I wanted to do for so long. So I hope that it reaches a wider audience, because it's a show that I'm very proud of. So fingers crossed people can see that one day.
So I will then half apologetically ask that question that probably comes up on this part of the conversation, but with a monster like Game of Thrones, and how many of the people are like, Jon Snow prequel, sequel, whatever. Like, would you go back? Do you go back that direction if that comes up?
It's a weird one, that, because I think that when I played that character for a decade, I think that I was able to access that because that character was much closer to the person that I was then. And that was a skin that I slipped into very easily. Now, having been away from it for 5 years, when I think about it, that character of Sam seems like he's behind glass now, and like I can't access him anymore. So it'd be interesting to see how there's been no kind of offer or any kind of approach about that. But I just think now, I think that we all progress as people, and sort of about looking forward. And I'd like to think that three-body problem will do something for my career in terms of people seeing me in a slightly different way. And I just think to just go back and even try to put that skin on again, I think it'd be a lot more difficult than people think it would, I think.
Right. I can understand that. Thank goodness for Three Body Problem, because it's exactly what I wanted to see right now. And it is, it's an incredible series. And again, I know I've said it, but congratulations, John, to you and the whole cast and the crew. And thank you so much for taking the time to talk about it.
Oh, my pleasure, Carl. Thank you for having me on, man. And thank you for, you know, hitting on music and stuff. You know that I could bore the world to death about that. This has been a really lovely chat. Thank you so much.
My thanks to John Bradley. Three Body Problem. You can look for it on Netflix. Thanks to you, of course, for checking out the episode. Hit that subscribe button if you haven't already. That way you get 3 new interviews sent to you every week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. That's our new episodes. And again, please do give the series a rating or leave a review. Either or. Both are helpful. After that, you can head over to WFPK.org. That's where I do a show Monday through Friday. Starts at 6 p.m. Eastern. You get 4 hours of classics from the 80s and 90s. You get the best in new music. There are bonus interviews, lots of music news as well. One of my recent shows featured classics from Dolly Parton, The Kinks, Liam Bailey, new music from Liam Bailey. We had Danger Man, Semisonic, Sheryl Crow, Bendigo Fletcher, Ani DeFranco, Eagles of Death Metal, Ramones, The Modern Lovers, The Killers, and my interviews with John Bon Jovi and Big Head Todd and the Monsters. Just an example of what you get every weeknight starting at 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on any of the social media sites. The address is always the same. It's at Kyle Meredith. So I do hope you like and follow along. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Let's do it. Let's do it.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.